This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those of who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And this is a very special day. Today is a workshop, and it was inspired by our own special correspondent, Bria Burton, and she had the idea. And so we are so happy to welcome today Alan Arnold. And our workshop is called Creativity, Fiction Writing, and How to Live a Better Story. And I'm so happy to welcome Bria here in the studio. And Alan on the phone. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing great, Betsy, and hi, Bria. I'm so excited to talk to you both about story and just ways to have a better story and create better stories.
Well, this is exciting. This is our first workshop, and I think maybe we're going to have to make this an annual workshop because there's so much to cover here with your wonderful books, and we've been really thrilled about it, haven't we, Bria, about the discovery, really, of your work.
Absolutely. I am thrilled to be here, Patsy. Thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this. And Alan, I am so excited to have you here talking to us about your books, and what you bring to the table is just incredible. So, I'm very excited for the whole thing.
The whole thing. Well, you know, I started reading C.S. Lewis when I was 14. So I was thrilled that you used a quote from him, and we're going to go over the books, of course, and talk about that. But the basic idea, you know, you have such an enormously challenging background. You've done everything. You've been a publisher, a novelist, a speaker, and you've come out with this very, very well thought out idea of how to be creative. So let's talk about where you started with this.
Sure. Well, I've always been a lover of story. As a young boy, I was drawn to it. And in some ways, it was a rescue for me because while I grew up in a loving home, I didn't grow up in a home where there was much deep conversation. Everything was pretty surface level. And so I felt like there had to be more than talking about the weather and sports and the surface things of life, but didn't really get that in day-to-day conversation and family life. And so I just felt like the whole idea of there's a bigger story out there, and through novels, through TV shows, through comic books, through Superman comics, you know, there was just this ability to go into the lives and thoughts and adventures of others. And that was a big rescue for me as a young man. And then later to actually become a publisher at one of the largest fiction houses, and to be able to, over the course of a decade, work with hundreds and hundreds of authors and more than 500 novels that I got to publish was a dream come true. It was a full circle, because story had been a rescue for me as a boy, and I started to realize the better stories help me live a better life. And so then I got to be part of that full circle by helping create novels and stories for other readers. So that's kind of been the short version of what's drawn me to story.
Well, creativity, you know, for anyone who sits down and writes a book, they have to feel that they're creative and that they want to share something with the reader. And I know, because I get so many books every week, and I get emails from authors, and they're saying, you know, I want to get my point across. I'm not sure if I'm doing it. I want to make sure that I reach that reader and touch their lives. So, Bria, with you, I know that you, with your sci-fi books, that you really gotten to a point where readers love your work because they feel that you understand them. So how does this all come together, this whole creativity?
Well, as a writer, one of the things that I don't struggle with is ideas. So the idea part actually comes fairly naturally in my personality and just the way that I'm wired, I think. So when it comes to things that I can think of to write about, I have no shortage. Often it's getting it down on the page and figuring out, is there actually a story here for this idea, or is this going to go in the notebook where it's on the shelf and I'll write the half ideas and that thing? So, some of the inspirations that I think about for creativity are things that I don't always expect. So like when I'm out for a run, because I happen to be a runner, and I'm seeing things in nature, and as I just go about my day, conversations that people have, if you sit and listen to the way people talk around you, that can really help speak into your dialogue. And so life teaches a lot of lessons for writers, just living it and then getting that down on the page into something that the reader can enjoy. Yeah, I mean, that's where you hope as a writer to get to that place where coming up with something creative enough. And in the sci-fi fantasy realm, often as I'm writing, I'm thinking to myself, I love to be surprised by the fantastical, by those clever sci-fi elements that jump out and you go, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Is this where this reader has taken me? So that's often something that I will try to do when I'm doing my own writing.
Now, Alan, with your book, The Story of With, you use allegory, and I love that. I think that's so clever, and I think it really draws the reader in. It's partly nonfiction and a lot of inspiration, but tell us about the story of With and why you chose that method to get across to the reader.
Sure. Well, I believe that story is a shortcut to the heart every time. And you can try to talk to people about theories and concepts and lessons in nonfiction, and that's great. But if you want to have a shortcut to the heart, it's always through story. And so, to me, the story of With came from an idea that, what if we're living a story that is less than the real story we could be living, and it plays out, in other words, the trail that has to be discovered is through our creativity, through our gifting, is actually what leads to the better story, if we follow that. That's in our DNA, and as we learn it, we start to learn our better story. And so the story of With is really like, what's a better way to pursue what we love and our dreams and our desires? And the protagonist in this allegory is named Mia, and I don't say this in the book anywhere, but I named her Mia because the initials MIA, missing in action. And she really represents all of us who, until we understand the truer story we were created for, we are kind of missing in action in our own life, in our own story. Nothing quite fits together. And so it's this wild, Matrix-like Alice in Wonderland fusion. It's fantastical that Mia actually gets pulled out of this reality into a reality of story where there's real consequences. You get cut, you bleed, you get killed, you die. But she's in this other reality, this other place, where she has to figure out what to do with these four vials that are empty that have to be filled one at a time before she can return. And so along the way, there's a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of, every chapter ends in a cliffhanger. But there's a purpose to it, and the purpose is, what is the better story that we can find ourselves in?
Well, of course, Mia's journey works around the idea that she's a... tell us about her father and the mystery behind that.
Right. Mia grew up with very little from her father or mother, and both of them were somewhat absent or missing from her story. But where they were present, they weren't helpful. And so she grew up to be a very driven person, which often happens in our lives. When we don't find approval and acceptance from those closest to us, then we become driven to find it somewhere. And so she is a high productivity, make it happen person. She is a chef. She loves to cook. She loves food, but nobody really sees or appreciates her gifting. And so Mia is actually trying to pursue her gifts and dreams in a world that seems opposed to it at every turn. And I think along the way, what readers, I don't want to say too much of the story, but what they'll find is, I think they'll see a lot of themselves in her journey, because it's really a journey into seeing life in a different way and realizing that there are both people around you and there are dreams within you that can lead to something far greater than just getting through the day. And so I tell it in a fantastical way where, you know, there's a talking raven, a psychotic raven in the story named O'Neill.
And
she is going up an elevator in a brownstone, but every level, when the doors open, it's sometimes the ocean rushing in at her. Sometimes it's another, like it's a field somewhere. And so reality starts to blur, and she starts to question what is real and what is her place in it. And the vials are keys to that she has to have filled. But yeah, it's something that I think readers will identify with, because we all have this feeling inside of us that there's something missing. There's something in our story that's leaving us a bit empty, even with success, even with achievement. I worked with, you know, in the publishing world, hundreds and hundreds of authors at the top of their game, writing every genre, sci-fi, fantasy, historical romance, suspense, young adult, and they were at the top of their game. But even working with writers at the top of their game who had some New York Times bestsellers, some brand new writers, but you started to realize that alone is not enough. Like they quickly realized, even with success in the very thing they love doing, that's not enough to fuel their story or the emptiness within. And so this book is really one that I think people will find, yeah, it's a page turner, high schoolers read it, adults of all ages read it. It's a fast read, but I want to leave the reader in a different place than when they opened the book and got to the first page. And that's my hope in this one, is that, yeah, if you're feeling like there's something more, not just to the story you're trying to write as a writer, but the story you're trying to live, then this is the kind of book that I think will leave you in a different place, in a better place.
Well, I'd love to speak into that as well, because when I first met you, Alan, I was at, and this is Bria speaking, when I was at Realm Makers Writers Conference for the first time, a conference specific to science fiction fantasy authors who are Christians. I was at that conference in 2021, and you were doing a workshop, and some of your ideas from this book, The Story of With, were you know, you were sharing with us during this workshop. And I remember just feeling so heard and seen, like, oh, he is speaking my language. Something is happening here. So I picked up the book, The Story of With, and as I read through this now, being a sci-fi fantasy fan as well as a writer, I love Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. I love that journey down the rabbit hole where you're discovering new creatures and people and what is happening here. And that I love that aspect of this book, even though it's nonfiction. It's this wonderful way you've written this book, and experiencing through Mia's eyes, you know, these different characters that she encounters was such a fascinating road to travel through kind of the discovery process in this book. And I just enjoyed it so much. I loved how she's fighting it, especially at the beginning. She's very much fighting it along the way. And I related so much to her as a character, of being that writer that's thinking, I have so many interruptions. I have so many things stopping me from getting to my page and doing the writing that I need to do. And this book really helped me think about, how am I viewing interruptions? How am I viewing the things that maybe, you know, are pretty big deals. Like, my husband and son probably wouldn't appreciate being called interruptions. Like, they're pretty important parts right. of my life, right? So right. when you look at a different lens, I think that's one thing this book did for me. It helped me look at my surroundings with a different lens to say, you know, the things that I'm going to put down on the page are very important, but how do I approach that? There might be a different way. And I love the invitation of this book that it provides for authors like me to try something different.
And you have basically a sort of four themes in the book that really you want to get across to people about, you know, staying expectant and all of these other things. So tell us about this. What are those four elements that are particularly important? And one of the things I love, you know, ever since Pilgrim's Progress, people have loved books about allegory.
Yeah,
I mean, they always resonate, and this one particularly does.
Right. Well, thank you. There, are four vials, and basically, I'll just tell you briefly about each one. But one of them is so each vial has a word carved into the vial on the outside of it, etched into it, and one of the words is awaken, and that's important for several reasons because most of us live through life with a dull numbness. That we're not quite aware fully of what's going on, what the larger story is, the deeper reality. And so Mia has to discover, what is that? And that one was, you know, carved into a blood red vial with a heart, and it was heart-shaped. And then there's another one that she finds that has the word together. And most of us, that was one that was like on a pearl-like finish vial, and she had to figure out, how do I do this journey together with others, together with God? Because we try to go through life alone in our own strength. And, you know, one of the biggest categories in bookstores is self-help. And self-help, if we're relying on self-help, we're toast. Because life is bigger than us. We can't be enough to solve all of our problems. But what does it look like to do that together? And then the third vial had the word identity on it. And this was a seafoam green-colored vial and looked like the kind of bottle you'd put a note in and cast to sea. But what did that mean? Well, she had to discover who she was. In other words, one of the things I say in the story of With is, who would you be if the world didn't already tell you who you were? Mm-hmm. She's got to figure that out on this journey. And then the fourth one, which is one of my favorites to talk about, had the word expectant carved on that. And the thing is, we go through life with expectations. We expect life to work a certain way. We know we do because we get disappointed when it doesn't. We feel like it should happen a certain way. My career, my family, my whole approach to life, I have expectations around. And when they don't work, we get taken out. But the vial is helping Mia and us understand we have to let go of expectations and replace that with expectancy. In other words, my demand of how the day must go, my checklist, but instead of that, what if we replace it with an expectancy of, God, what do you have for me today? Of an openness to what's possible, not our rigid expectations. So those are the four vials, and throughout the book, the story, the allegory, Mia has to discover how to fill each one in order to get to the next, and then the next. And I think readers will find the way that happens unexpected, wild, and pretty fascinating.
Yeah, definitely unexpected. That's what makes it an exciting read, isn't it? You don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know if she's going to blossom with all of this knowledge that she's developing.
Mm-hmm. Right, she's fighting it the whole way through.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's going a little bit back to C.S. Lewis. You know, he was an inspiration for really so many people, and this whole idea of of looking for God in our work and in our lives. It is so important.
Oh, it's extremely important because we were created by a creator, and if we go through life not understanding that, and we think we're all on our own, or we think life is all up to us, or that there is no purpose. I mean, a lot of people listening are writers, and no writer would ever set out to write a story that had no design, no purpose. If they did, I wouldn't want to read it, because that would not be a good story. All stories, as a writer, we know, have an intentionality, a design. And C.S. Lewis picked up on this in a lot of his writings, where he was talking about, yes, if stories that men and women write are intentional, how much more intentional is the story we find ourselves in? Because it has a storyteller, and the Creator has created us and placed us into story. The language of Scripture, when you look at the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, the language of Scripture is story. It's not principles. It's not morals. It's mostly stories. This is how life works in the most unexpected, impossible ways if you enter into it together with God. And if you fight it, then your story starts to shrink. In other words, one way to say it is, if God is the most real being, and I believe he is, and I believe he created reality, then the more we push against that, the more we walk away from that, the less real we become, and the less real our story becomes. Because we're moving away from reality into unreality. And that sounds a little bit like the language of The Matrix or Alice in Wonderland or The Truman Show. And it is, because they're picking up on that, that you know, in The Truman Show, he is placed in unreality. Everything is a stage set for the character, right? And he doesn't know it. And until he discovers that, he's stuck in an illusion, in unreality. And I think these movies that we love so much, like The Matrix, like The Truman Show, books like Alice in Wonderland, they're touching on this truth of there's something more. And that's what C.S. Lewis did through, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia and the Space Trilogy, and so much of his fiction as well as his nonfiction.
So when an author starts working on a book, what do you think, how do you suggest that they even before they put, pen to paper or start on that keyboard, what thought process should they go through at that moment?
Right, great question. When I coach authors and writers, and so I spend a lot of time helping them get unstuck. And usually the place they're stuck, and I'm talking about at the very beginning, but also in the middle or throughout the process, is that they are stuck in the story they're living, and so the story they're writing gets logjammed as well. And I think the best way for an author to begin is to say, what is it in my journey, I'm talking about their life, that I can't quit thinking about, that I'm fascinated by, that I have this unique view or way of seeing it that others don't? That's the kind of story that I love to see a writer pursue, because they're taking the journey they're on, a theme of disappointment, a theme of betrayal, a theme of a second reality that others don't see, or possibilities. And then they take their journey and questions and struggles, and they start creating story that is a journey that reflects in some ways, not with certain events being the same, but on a larger level, thematically, that takes them into story that can be very powerful. And on the opposite side of that, when a writer tries to follow a formula for a genre, oh, every sci-fi novel has to have these beats. Oh, every romance has to have these beats. Well, that's where we get these forgettable, predictable stories, because the reader already knows where it's headed because they've read it 1,000 times, just different variations of it. That's why every Hallmark movie feels the same. That's why so many suspense movies feel the same. So many sci-fi novels feel the same. because it's being based on formula and not awe and wonder of a, of an idea that somebody can't quit wrestling with. Instead, they start going, let me write to the beat of this formula for this genre.
That's true.
When people can get unstuck, that's helpful.
Because then when you stand out, when you come out with, and you're bold enough to take your idea and run with it, no matter what, that makes a difference, and it certainly changes an author. And I love, of course, that's the surprise when I get an author like that. Now, we're going to have to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about your other book, The Eden Option, and then we're going to be talking a little bit about some classic tropes, about the hero's journey, and things like that. So let's have some commercials, and just hold on, Alan, and we'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back here in the studio with Bria Burton, and on the phone, Alan Arnold, and we are talking about, well, we are doing our first Joy on Paper workshop, and about creativity, and so we're going to be talking now to Alan about another of his books called The Eden Option. That's his most recent book, and tell a quick story. I was visiting a girlfriend in Arizona, and I was sitting on the porch. She had a lovely porch, a ranch style house, and suddenly she pulled out a gun and she shot a snake right in front of me. It freaked me out. I remember thinking, boy, if she'd been in the Garden of Eden, things would have been different. I mean, she didn't hesitate. I didn't even know she had the gun. But I mean, that's the life in Arizona.
That's wild.
So tell us about this, because it does revolve around the Garden of Eden. So tell us about this book.
Sure. Well, the Eden Option is basically a way to choose a better story. And so the subtitle is Choosing a Story, One Life in a Story, Two World. And what I mean by that is, much like The Matrix, I think we are born into the wrong story, every one of us, every one of us. And so the question is, if that's true, and if there's a better story, another story that we were meant for, what happened? Well, like any good movie or novel, the answer is you have to go all the way back to the beginning. Don't start in the middle. Don't just assume life has always been the way it's been, because it's been that way for you. that's your normal, but that's not the deeper reality. So the Eden option starts by taking us back to Eden, to the beginning. What were we created for and what got lost? And so I define in the Eden option, story one and story two this way. Story one is the original story. It was what we were made for, a way of life with God at the center. Story two, it's the default narrative that we're born into. It tries to make life work in our own strength. In other words, we're the center of that story. And that's not the way our story, I'm talking about humanity's story, began. It began in paradise. It began in a garden. It began in Eden, where we actually were created for our intimacy, for adventure. We were created to be with God, walk with Him in the cool of the day in the garden. There was relational power and intimacy. And as everybody knows in that story, if they don't, the short version is at some point, the first man and woman began to doubt God's voice and presence for the presence of another voice that said, there's a better way. There's a self way. You don't need what's here. You don't need God. You can make life work on your own. And so a tree of knowledge over a tree of life was chosen. And we have continued to this day to be born in more of an Ecclesiastes reality than an Eden reality. Ecclesiastes meaning everything is meaningless. We go through the same motions, but it never leads anywhere. That's Ecclesiastes, the book in the Bible that is a pretty downer of a book. Read it for where it leads to, because it's saying no matter what you do or try when you're on your own, it never leads to anything. Ultimately, even success is failure. And so that's the world we're born into, because Adam and Eve lost Eden by choosing a self-life, a story two life. So they were born in story one, created in story one, rather, and then they traded it for story two. We, everyone since, are born in story two, and we have to find our way back. We have to choose story one. And so the Eden option really is that. It's trying to answer that question. C.S. Lewis says in Mere Christianity, the question is not what we intended ourselves to be, but what God intended us to be when He made us. And that's really the question. If we want to be the protagonist in our story, we have to know what is the point of the story, what is the journey we're being invited into. And if it's wilder and bigger and more mysterious and more surreal than we ever could have imagined, then we need to know that. Like, imagine if we don't, we're just going through the motion. And we watch a great movie like The Matrix, we're going, Neo, yes, find your destiny. Find what you were created for. This is an illusion. Truman Show, the same thing. Alice in Wonderland, all the great stories are saying life isn't as it seems. And so the Eden option is really, how do we choose story one? Because if we want to create better stories, it begins with us living the better story. And so that's what the book starts out as. It's an invitation into your current reality isn't the only reality. There's a far better one. God created you for a far better story. Not a religious story, not a church story. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the wild garden of Eden, paradise, intimacy with God. That's what we were created for. And when we step into that and we know God as creator, our creativity exponentially increases, because we're no longer creating in our own strength. We're creating with the creator as He designed us. And so if you want the best stories, there's your path, is align with the creator in your creativity rather than trying to follow formula or do it in your own strength.
That resonates so much with me. And as you shared with us some of your slides from the book, I'm looking at that traditional hero's journey, which is very familiar probably to a lot of the writers who are listening, because it often starts with that call to adventure, and the process, the plot typically follows these typical patterns of refusal of the call. The hero is saying no, but then the mentor appears, the trials and failures, the death and rebirth, the transformation and the powers, and all the way to the reward. And you, I'm thinking just off the top of the Lord of the Rings, you could think of as a very traditional hero's journey, where you have Frodo with the needs to take the ring to Mordor. And we can follow that path and see how he gets there. And this idea in the Eden option, you use the phrase homeward journey. So will you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, you know, the hero's journey, almost every movie that we love, every show, Star Wars, Wizard of Oz, you know, yes, Lord of the Rings, you'd be hard-pressed not to find one that doesn't somehow follow that model, where the story begins with the person that has to go from the known world to the unknown. And it starts with that call to adventure. Well, that sounds really good. And yeah, it's a model that's worked for Hollywood and screenplay writers and novelists. And it does reflect reality to a certain degree. But I think the problem with it is the hero's journey actually is an Ecclesiastes journey, because it is a call to adventure, but it's a story to use the language of story two. The hero starts in story two and he ends in story two. Yes, he wins some micro victory. He returns with an elixir. He wins the battle. He wins the, you know, whatever it is, right? The whole goal of the story is. But it's a micro victory. Take the movie Rocky. Like, most people have seen the Sylvester Stallone movies, Rocky and Rocky 2 and Rocky 3, and
absolutely,
on and
yep.
On. Well, Rocky, you know, like, it is your adrenaline increases in the movie. He's in the ring and he's trying to win the fight. And so there's this elixir. For him, it's the victory in the ring. And so we're hyped up. And at the end of the first movie, he does. But it's a micro victory, because when you start Rocky 2, he's the same person again. He's still in an Ecclesiastes world. He still is the same basic person. He has just won a fight. And it's like the guy that wins the Super Bowl and gets the ring, or it's the, you know, woman that gets the New York Times bestseller and gets the award and gets the credit and the fame. But at the end of the day, we look at them and we go, and it's not enough. It was a micro victory. The hero's journey keeps us in story two. It just gives us a little trinket, our reward within story two, but that was never the story we were created for. And so the best we get in story two is a story two victory. So that's why I started looking at this model called the homeward journey. And in the homeward journey, what I mean by that is, what if we looked at the journey not as starting in story two and staying in story two, which basically is the hero's journey, I would say, but what if we looked at the homeward journey as we start in story two, the false story, the narrative that isn't the truest thing, and then we make our way back into what we were created for, story one. And so that's not a micro victory, that's a macro victory. That's huge, because the things that we're getting there is a return to our true story, a return to our true identity, a return to our true home. And so we basically find ourselves on a journey in the, what I would say is the homeward journey, back to the deepest longings of our heart. And when stories can tap into that versus, you know, winning a fight or getting an elixir or getting the, you know, romantic interest, like, all of a sudden it takes on, not that those things wouldn't happen in the homeward journey, but there's a deeper gravity, there's a deeper reason for it. And that's what I've been inviting storytellers to try to create, stories that don't just stay in story two the whole time. Because, you know, the hero's journey distorts reality by constructing these stories where it's up to us to save the day or the world through our intelligence and our strength. In other words, we don't really need God. We don't really need anything higher than us. We just need to be good enough, smart enough, you know, strategic enough. We need to be the MacGyver of our story to make things happen. And then, so we start creating these stories and we make ourselves the hero. And then we wonder why we live in a world where we don't see God do heroic things. But the hero's journey can never fully get us there. And I think that's why people keep going back to movies, hoping for some larger, deeper story ending or outcome. And it's a little anticlimactic because, yes, they won the fight. Rocky wins the fight. Yes, somebody gets the prize. But at the end of the day, we know that's not enough. And the homeward journey goes counter to that. It says, yeah, there is a better story we were created for, one you can find identity and union and your true home. And so that's the model that I'm inviting storytellers into. Start us in story two, but end us in story one, the truer story. If it stays in story two the whole time, then yes, it follows a model that has worked, but it's not the truest story. It's not the best story. And I think Lord of the Rings actually is more of a homeward journey, because
I was thinking because Frodo is not the one who throws the ring into Mordor, right? Yeah.
So what other films exemplify this Eden option, which is basically you're putting a beacon out there calling us back to God. So are there other films that exemplify this?
Well, I think it's really hard for some of the best movies, I think, we can see what they're trying, what the potential is, but I don't think Hollywood tends to want to tell stories that do this, because Hollywood, and I use Hollywood loosely as a term, but the major studios are more interested, I think, in following formula and indoctrination than they are imagination, and certainly than they are about revealing any thought of God or a higher power in any true way. So I think most of the movies, we have to look into it like an allegory or a parable and go, oh, I see. Like, I don't know if you've seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, but it's one of my favorite movies with Ben Stiller. And it's a movie of a man that has no life, who works at Life the magazine, who is trying to figure out his identity and his story. And at the end, he comes alive. And so you can see in that movie, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, wow, all the marks of a homeward journey are there. Hollywood just doesn't have the words for it. And so some of the novels that do it, I think, and movies in this case, but like Lord of the Rings does a really good job of that. Because I'm not saying there needs to be an explicit recognition of God in some kind of wrap it up with a bow conversation. But I am saying we need to address the core longings that we have, which are far more than the surface external focus of I win the person over to me romantically, or I win the war, or I win the battle. Because at the end of the day, it's Ecclesiastes. There's always more battles. There's always more wars. There's always more elixir, because none of that was meant to satisfy us on a soul level. I think when you look at some stories, what C.S. Lewis did in the Chronicles of Narnia and in the Space Trilogy, which few people have tended to read, but the Space Trilogy was written 80 plus years ago, roughly, and I just finished the third for like a third reading, That Hideous Strength, and it is wild how it takes what's going on in our world today that C.S. Lewis, through story, was writing about 80 years ago. But it's drawing us into deeper waters, deeper truths. Madeline L'Engle and her Wrinkle in Time, for those who have read that. Like, these are not, you wouldn't ever call these preachy or heavy-handed works. They're works that have an eternal spark. They're works that bring us into something deeper than ourselves. But, you know, most Hollywood movies are all about self-realization. It's all about the self and who we want to be, and there's a bigger story than that. There's a story that we were brought into to play a role in, but like Frodo, we're not the lead in the story, and so any story that glamorizes us as the answer or the hero is going to fall short. And that's most hero's journey stories. So my desire for storytellers is there is a better way to tell a story, but you can't tell story one stories while living a story two life. So it starts with you, and the stories flow from you. And so if you're stuck in story two, your stories that you tell will always be story two stories. But if you want to break into story one and start telling those stories, talk about stories that will resonate with people because it answers the deepest question. Everyone wants to feel, I had a counselor that told me recently, every person you ever will meet at heart wants to be fully known, fully seen, and fully loved. But they believe if they were ever fully seen and fully known, they couldn't be fully loved. But in Eden, in the beginning, we were fully seen, fully known, and fully loved. And so any story that can take us back thematically, allegorically, not literally, I'm not saying stories have a Bible verse at the end. I'm not saying that you're trying to be heavy-handed. I'm saying if you can pick up on these themes that were lost from Eden to now and start bringing those themes back into your work of identity, of home, of being fully seen, known, and loved, not just these trinkets and elixirs that are the payoff at the end, then your stories will take on much more life. And that's what I get to coach people in. And it's fun to see them at the end. They're like, wow, Alan, you didn't just help me tell a better story. Like, I'm actually approaching life differently. And that's worth more than the story. Like, exact. Right. That was intentional because it won't happen any other way. If all we're trying to do is follow formulaic ways to churn out more stories, the world doesn't need that. We've got more books than we could ever read in our lifetime. We've got more movies than we could ever see in our lifetime. We don't just need more of similar things. As Patsy was saying at the beginning, we need stories that surprise us, that undo us, that invite us into something that we feel like is beyond our wildest imagination. And we can't get there through formula, through craft alone. Craft alone is not enough for a good story. You can do a well-crafted book that is the most boring, pointless waste of time, but it's well-crafted. And so we don't want that. We want storytellers who are alive. And Les Mis is another good example of a novel and of in later movies where there's this eternal spark to it. And one of my favorite quotes in the movie and in the novel Les Mis is from a bishop who is said, he says, "I don't want to be a man who just knows more about God. I want to be a man who is dazzled by God."
Oh, that's beautiful.
And we need to write stories that cause us to have awe and wonder and be dazzled by this creation that God has made, by the story that God has made, not just, yep, here's the hero's journey model and I've done all the steps and so I've written a good book and it's well-crafted. Right, and we have millions of those.
You mentioned, we don't have much time, and you mentioned your coaching. So I want to give you a chance to explain what you do coaching-wise and how people can contact you and about your program, basically, how they get to you.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, people can find more out about me at the website With Alan, and that's withallen.com. And it has information about my coaching. For people, I coach writers, you know, almost every day of the week. During the weekdays, I'm doing this actively by Zoom or by phone call. But the thing is, it's people who are open to seeing the larger story God is trying to tell in their life through who they are and what they do. And so people who are open to that, because that's what we'll talk about, is who did God create you to be? And what is the story he's trying to tell through your life and your words and your gifting? And so people can find out more about the coaching there. They can also get free daily readings on God's story and creativity. It's free to go on my website. You just go to withallen.com/sign-up. And in Monday through Friday, it's a couple of paragraphs just to encourage you on this journey that it's really gained a lot of traction, and I think it's making a difference in a lot of people's lives. And all my books are on Amazon, and including the story of With and the Eden option. So, yeah, that's my hope, is I want people to realize there's more available. And it starts with story. And it starts with the story you were created for and the stories you were born to write, then if you're a writer. But it all flows from that, from an awakened heart and from a realization that there's a deeper reality, a better one than you could have ever imagined.
Well, as I said, this is our first creativity workshop, and thanks to Bria's brilliant idea to get you on the program. But I think we will make it an annual event, if you don't mind, and you'll come back next year, and we'll go through some more ideas of yours.
I would love to, because we covered a lot of great ground, and we just scratched the surface. And so I'd love to continue the conversation.
That's what I was thinking, too. There's so much more. You have so much more to share.
And I love the story one, story two makes me think of telling the truth. Like, we can live our lives as a lie, and that doesn't really fulfill anybody, including ourselves. But what you seem to be kind of, if I could sum it up with, suggesting that we live in the truth, and then we tell stories that are telling the truth, and that some of the best stories are ones that resonate with us because they tell the truth and we see truth in them. And I love that invitation of choosing between the red pill and the blue pill, like Neo in the Matrix.
It is a choice. And yeah, that's the exciting thing, is we don't have to be stuck. We don't have to do this on our own or be alone. C.S. Lewis, I'm going to close this with a quote that I just love from him that says, "When the whole world is running towards a cliff, the one running in the opposite direction appears to have lost his mind." Mm. That, to me, is the red pill, blue pill, story one, story two. Yep, the world has never been more chaotic. You will not find stories good enough in story two to provide answers for that, or hope, or love enough for that. But story one has all those answers. And it starts all the way back in the beginning, in a garden in paradise. And if we go back to that, we choose it. It's a choice. But if we do, everything that flows from that, including the best stories the world has yet to read, because they haven't been written yet, can begin.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ellen Arnold, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy for Bria and for me to have you on the program.
Very much.
And to be able to talk about your ideas. We've enjoyed reading your books. And as I said, we'll have you back, and we'll have another great creativity workshop. How about that?
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I love this conversation, and love what you both are doing here, and what you bring to people every day and every week through this. So thank you for letting me be part of it today.
Well, thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Bria. Wonderful.
That was a lot of fun to hear from him. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, everybody. Again, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We had a lot of fun. Bria is so clever. She came out with this idea. And as I said, we'll be back. And she's going to be here. Not next week. She's going to be here
in a couple weeks for a sci-fi themed show with Veronica Roth as a guest.
Whoa, that's a big deal. That's going to be lots of fun. So again, Bria, thank you so much. And I will thank Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything you do for us. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I always salute him. And I should have been a general. I'd have been good.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye, everybody.